Welcome to From the Expert, a Spring Ridge Academy podcast that talks to leaders in the field of psychology about the therapeutic modalities that they are passionate about. Today we're talking with George W. Bitar. Dr. Bitar has a PhD in marriage and family therapy, is licensed in North Carolina, Texas, and Arizona, and has published multiple peer-reviewed articles on substance abuse, cross-cultural counseling, and the integration of mental health care in primary care settings. Dr. Bitar is extensively trained in Gottman Methods Couples Therapy and Emotionally Focused Couples Therapy. You can find out more about Dr. Bitar and his services at connectcouplestherapy.com.
George, thank you so much for being part of our podcast. I wanted to offer you an opportunity to introduce yourself and give kind of a bio about your history and how you got into the work of couples work.
Yeah, great, Susie. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is George Bitar. I run Connect Couples Therapy, co-own it along with my wife, Faith Drew. We both met in grad school, taught at universities for a while, and then kind of transitioned into the full-time private practice thing. We have a location in Charlotte, North Carolina, and now we have one in the Phoenix area in Carefree, Arizona specifically. But we work mostly with couples using more attachment emotion-based approaches, including emotionally focused couples therapy and also Gottman Method couples therapy. We also do the workshops for the Gottman Institute. We're one of the couples that we coordinate with and provide their art and science of love workshops, which is, you know, sort of a nice overview of about 40 years of research and different tools and strategies to help couples be able to improve healthy relationships and then to decrease, you know, challenges in relationships when those are there. So mostly seeing couples online for now, mostly, hopefully back more and more in person before long, and then also doing those workshops several times a year.
So George, let me ask, for a person that's just kind of stepping into the world of different therapeutic services available to families or couples, mm-hmm. how would you differentiate couples-specific therapy from family therapy?
Yeah, it's a great question. There is a lot of overlap, depending on the models, the way I see it, at least. A lot of the family work and the couples work is more systemic based. So really focusing on interactional patterns, how couples and families respond to different emotions, healthy ways to respond, ways that respond then end up rupturing relationships. I think more and more too, there's a lot of overlap with all the research on attachment, you know, this idea of what defines an emotionally secure relationship. A lot of those principles apply to families and also to the couples work. So having a relationship where there's room for emotion, room for experience, there's a sense of validation and attunement, you know, to the emotional level of what's going on in a relationship, a sense of responsiveness and accessibility emotionally, and the sense of being able to work things through in more of kind of an usness kind of a dynamic, a more collaborative dynamic than an adversarial dynamic. So there is a lot of overlap, I think, between those, that family work, family systems work, and also the couples work kind of in those regards.
I love the usness. Mm. That's such a great way to say it, an usness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me how you would define or describe attunement.
Yeah, actually, John Gottman has a great acronym for it, A-T-T-U-N-E. And he defines it as the awareness of the emotion, both in myself and the other, whether it's a child or a partner, turning towards the emotion as opposed to turning away from the emotion or trying to fix it too quickly or judging it or dismissing it. Tolerance for the emotion. So this idea of being able, this idea of emotional tolerance, being able to tolerate the range of different emotions. Oftentimes people might be more comfortable with something like anger, but not comfortable with sadness or vice versa. So being able to tolerate the experience of a spectrum of different emotions, understanding the emotion. So being able to ask open-ended questions, being curious about what's happening in our child's or our partner's internal world, non-defensive responding. That's a lot of times where it's easy to get stuck. You know, if my partner's feeling something and I'm contributing to it, I can get pretty defensive pretty quickly. So moving into non-defensive responding, trying to understand where they're coming from. And then that empathy variable too, being able to empathize, being able to validate, being able to get the emotional connection online prior to moving into some kind of problem solving. And then from that place, whatever problems we're trying to solve, we're doing it from a much more emotionally connected collaborative space rather than that adversarial space. So that attune again is like awareness of emotion, turning towards the emotion, tolerance of emotion, understanding the emotion, non-defensive responding, and then empathy sort of, you know, completes that acronym, which is a handy kind of go-to. I know for me it is.
It's a wonderful way to remember how to define such an important term when it comes to either caregiving relationships or romantic relationships, all kinds of work relationships. Mm-hmm. I once worked with a father who was very active in his Al-Anon community, who would frequently say to me, "I'm putting on my oxygen mask." And I thought of that when you talked about emotional tolerance and turning in, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of me regulating me is the first step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot in that. And I love that metaphor of first being able to put on that oxygen mask on myself. Because if I'm dysregulated, if I'm reactive, it's going to be impossible for me to have the bandwidth to take in my partner's experience and their emotion. So being able to put that oxygen mask on first, being able to make sure I'm in a more or less kind of regulated space is a huge piece. And then those two things, I see them playing off each other. It's like that feedback loop where in a positive way, the more regulated I'm feeling, the more in touch with my emotions, but in a little bit more regulated way that I'm experiencing them, so I can describe them in a way that doesn't feel critical or withdrawing. The more that helps my partner regulate their nervous system, and the more I'm there for my partner, that helps me regulate their nervous system in my nervous system. So there's this dance between the self-regulation and this co-regulation. And hopefully trying to reinforce both parts of those. And the opposite happens too, unfortunately, where the more the self gets dysregulated, the more it can dysregulate the partner, the more it dysregulates the partner, the more it can dysregulate myself. And, you know, that cycle of dysregulation or regulation can spin up in both directions pretty dramatically.
Absolutely. Just think of a tense car ride when we're lost. Right. And in a previous podcast, when I interviewed Dr. Berselli, who works with trauma and tension release exercise, he was noting that he is seeing families specifically during the COVID period hold up at home, doing multiple roles, right? As a parent, I might be a teacher for my child. I'm trying to work. I'm trying to stay sane. He was talking about how family systems are so easily dysregulated under the current stress that we have with the pandemic and, you know, all the other things that are happening in the world.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think like the families are largely isolated, and a lot of that's been even a little bit made more extreme with the pandemic and everything everyone's been going through. But yeah, we're meant to really be in communities of lots of different people that are supporting our families and getting lots of different outlets for individual and family support. So I think that's right. I mean, I can feel that. I can feel that in our own family and then in the couples that I work with, where everything feels like it's under much more intensity and a lot of negative interactions where people get stuck. They may have been kind of challenging before, and now they've become extremely challenging. So it's sort of put whatever dynamics are there for a lot of couples on steroids a bit. And I think that's exactly right. We are consciously, our nervous system's very primal circuitry is always tuning into whether or not the environment feels safe or unsafe, and then getting regulated or dysregulated accordingly. And ideally in family systems and couple systems, there's a way to kind of manage that dysregulation together in a way that leads to more security in the relationship and more trust and emotional responsiveness. But it can certainly work the other way, you know, pretty dramatically as well, with more disconnection, more dysregulation, and especially now with everyone being under more of this kind of pressure cooker experience.
And I like that you mentioned being in some ways disconnected from our communities, or I call them tribes, right? Mm-hmm. That we all have these ways in which we feed ourselves spiritually, emotionally, physically, right? Periods of time where people weren't even going to their exercise gym.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. It sort of takes us being able to tap into a lot of different sources of support. And I think even before that, you know, a lot of people live away from their extended family. A lot of people move, you know, for jobs and for different needs. And so not having that stable community over a long period of time, you know, people that knew us when we were little and are there for us as we grow older, and, you know, people that we can turn to for wisdom and advice, you know, that know us on this intimate level, a lot of that has been ruptured. So I think it does put a lot more on the couple system and the family system to have to provide more of a range of emotional needs. And I do think that's one reason that there can be more families and couples that are struggling, not because there's something wrong in them, but because there have been so many tectonic shifts, I think, culturally, that we're still kind of adapting to and feeling our way through.
Now, and I think you used the term emotionally focused couples therapy. Could you give a cliff note on what that looks like?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably the simplest way I could put it is, at the end of the day, we look for our partners for a sense of emotional accessibility, responsiveness, and engagement. And if they're there for us emotionally more than they're not, we end up in a pretty secure, trusting relationship. When our partners aren't there for us at the level that we need them to be, or when we get disconnected, misattuned emotionally with each other, there's not a way to reattune or repair that fissuring connection, then we can end up in a little bit more reactive, insecure kind of relationship. And oftentimes when people, that's a place of lots of loneliness, it's a place of lots of pain. And because it doesn't feel safe to express that kind of vulnerability, because the relationship's not feeling very secure, people tend to move towards one or two coping strategies or defensive strategies. Understandably, they either move into pursue mode, where they're trying to pursue their partner for more connection, to repair the sense of loneliness and isolation and pain that they're feeling. Unfortunately, the way people often pursue can come across to their partners as more critical or judgmental, you know, focusing on what's wrong in their partner. And that can activate a lot of pain in the partners, which then makes them want to move into more defensive strategies and makes them want to withdraw. So oftentimes what you see with EFT is people, in trying to cope with their pain, move either into pursue or withdraw modes of trying to come back to some kind of connection. The dark irony is, when one person's pursuing in a more critical way, that often makes their partners feel defensive and want to withdraw. And the more their partners withdraw, the more disconnection happens, the more the partners want to pursue. And you get this feedback loop of criticize, defend, attack, withdraw, that has a whole life of its own. And it's a tragic feedback loop, because both people oftentimes want more closeness. They want more safety, but their very way of trying to pursue for that safety creates the opposite of what they're wanting. It actually creates more distance and more disconnection. Then over time, it's common, you know, we often see oftentimes the pursuers are the ones that are reaching out for couples therapy. But at some point, the pursuers end up burning out, and they move into this burned out pursuer place where they kind of give up. And then that's when we see the withdrawers all of a sudden get freaked out. Oh, I'm really going to lose my partner. I don't want to lose them. And then they might initiate the couples therapy. So the work of couples therapy from the EFT perspective would be to, number one, identify the cycle, who's more of the pursuer, who's more of the withdrawer. What's the thing that triggers that interaction? What's happening on the surface emotionally? And then what's happening underneath, you know, in more of the painful, sad, loneliness places inside, and then helping them to see the negative cycle. And then over time, when enough safety is built up, to help them to turn towards each other and talk for more of those vulnerable, authentic types of emotions, rather than just acting in more pursuer withdrawal ways, or going into more just frustration, anger, you know, kinds of places. And through that, talking about their fears, talking about their needs, talking about the pain, that's driving the cycle. That's the space where a more secure, open, emotionally responsive relationship can be built from. Hopefully that may be too much, not enough, but how does that land on you?
That was perfect. And how it lands is truly the essence of therapy in the sense that moving beyond what I call the noise, right? We could probably sit and talk about how you don't clean up your car or how, you know, you've been late so many times, but we're not going to get more connected, right? And humans always want to connect more, even the introverts.
You got it. Yeah, that's it. And I love that statement, moving beyond the noise. Yeah, moving beyond the content. It's so easy to get stuck on the content. And if only my partner would change this thing or do this thing. Yeah, and this sort of gets underneath the noise into what's really happening in terms of these emotionally disconnecting patterns. Yeah, they can come out in a lot of different contexts or across a lot of different topics. Yeah,
I mean, if you're ever around other human beings, you're going to have content, right?
That's right. Yes.
But to see beyond the content and to connect in a deeper way, not just to someone else, but then in turn to self.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. In both directions. And that's so often, like, for a lot of pursuers, they think they're being vulnerable because they're seeking for connection, but they're not necessarily really talking about what they're really feeling in themselves in as vulnerable a way, what they're really needing, what the values are that their emotions are signaling, in a way that might be likely to draw the withdrawer more towards them. Oftentimes, they think they're being very expressive, but it can come across in much more of a critical kind of way. And same thing for withdrawers. I think your intuition is right on, even for introverts. And withdrawers and introverts are kind of different categories in some ways. But we all, even people that are the most introverted, we're mammals. Like, we're wired up to be in relationship. That can look very different for different people. The intensity of connection can be very different for different people in terms of what makes them feel happy and satisfied in life. But that underlying core drive is there for everybody. And so much of the work is being able to create enough safety for people to tap into that. And then if they're both, you know, on the same page with wanting that in the relationship, helping them to get that kind of connection.
Well, and one of the things that I love about your practice, or you and Faith's practice, is the idea that you not only do couples sessions, but you do couples intensives.
Mm.
And can you speak to what you see as a potential benefit of an intensive compared to what we might think of more of an outpatient practice where maybe it's a weekly session?
Yeah, the big advantage I like of the intensives is kind of probably like what you're intuiting in bringing it up. It is, you get to really get through a lot of the content, you know, kind of the initial sort of stuck points and the topics where couples get stuck around. And you can really take the time to help them to see their negative cycle, because it tends to get triggered up in the course of the session. And then we get a chance to kind of step back and see if we can name what's happening in the room in this moment. You know, what's happening as that person's moving into more of what the other partner might experience as more criticism. You know, what's happening for this other person as they're starting to shut down or go into a more defensive posture. And it gives us a chance to really explore that, really take a look at it, really get curious about what's happening in real time. And then to start to dig down to what are the underlying types of emotions around fear and sadness and pain and longing, you know, for more connection and the experience of not being able to have that longing fulfilled. You know, what's happening more at that core level, and what are they needing from each other? Not from a behavioral level, like, I need you to take out the trash more, but it's like, I need to feel safe with you. You know, I need to feel like I'm enough with you. I need to feel like you're not going to abandon me. I'm terrified that you're going to abandon me. Getting more to those underlying, more vulnerable fears. And in the course of the intensive, it allows for the space and time to be able to kind of take those steps downwards to those core emotions. In a way that is just, you know, obviously much quicker than, you know, trying to meet, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks, where you're spending the first part of the session catching up, You're spending the first part of the session kind of talking about the most recent negative interaction. And then you can get to those deeper levels, but there's not as much time to stay there. And it tends to be when at least, you know, we're kind of through with half the session. And so there's not the time to go as deep, as expansive, and to kind of stay and give people the direct experience of being able to engage in this more emotionally open and responsive place and sit in that and experience themselves in that and their partner in that. We might get into some of it and then kind of have to bounce up and they have to get ready to make the kids dinner and to go on with life. And so there's something about having that carved out intensive time that just allows for progress to be made quite a bit quicker.
Yeah. You're taking that opportunity to really nurture that primary relationship.
Yeah.
Right? George, it's been such a pleasure to visit together today. If you wouldn't mind stating again the name of your practice, we will also put a link to your website with the podcast, but just so we have it again, the name of your practice.
Yeah, it's Connect Couples Therapy. Again, I run that with my partner in crime, business partner, wife, Faith Drew. And then we have locations in Carefree, Arizona, Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's connectcouplestherapy.com. And we have other clinicians do the work at our practice with different styles, different temperaments and personalities. So there's a range in terms of finding a good fit when couples reach out to try to kind of match them with who might be the best fit clinician-wise.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And my hope is that we help some couples find ways to connect and support each other in a way that's more meaningful and provides much more joy in their relationships.
Yeah, I love the way you described that. That could be our mission statement.
Let's do it.
And I really appreciate the opportunity, Susie, and always enjoy catching up with you.
Yeah, well, let's catch up again really soon.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thanks, George.
All right, thank you, Susie. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to From the Expert. We hope you'll join us next time. Be well.